Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, May 31st, 2024. Residents of Malakal remain indoors due to ethnic targeted killings in the town.
Yesterday night, we received two dead bodies. One was sustaining the multiple head injuries due to hitting using this fungus. The person passed on as a result.
And South Sudan receives thousands of doses of new malaria vaccine for saving lives.
This vaccine really adds to our arsenal interventions that will help us in managing the malaria burden.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. At least two people were killed in Malakal Thursday in what appears to be a revenge attack. Witnesses say shops in the South Sudan city are closed today as traders and businesses exercised caution. Mamer Abraham Kwart reports for VOA from Malakal on the tension.
Some residents of Upper Nile state capital Malakal are indoors Friday following the death of a man who was allegedly beaten Thursday night outside the United Nations Protection of Civilian Camp in Malakal town. The UN told aid workers in Malakal town to stay indoors because of the tensions after some members of the host community and some camp residents clashed. Dr. Kat Deng, medical director of Malakal Teaching Hospital, confirmed the incident near the gate of the UN camp.
Yesterday night, we received two dead bodies. One was sustaining the multiple head injuries due to hitting using this fungus. The person passed on as a result of those multiple hitting on his head. I will receive that body around 11:30 midnight. And secondly, we receive another dead body. It was a gunshot case in the town. And this is the one now, there is no people or the people who show up as a relative so that they can easily try to prepare his burial.
The family of one victim has collected the body, but the other has yet to be claimed. Deng says the hospital is not equipped to keep bodies for more than 8 hours, but that due to the tension, relatives might not be able to collect the body of their loved one. John Luong, a civil society activist, says land issues are causing conflict in Upper Nile State. He says the state government should tell the national government about the causes of conflict in some parts of Upper Nile State.
This cold blood killing, which is happening here and there, and no one seems to be paying attention to it. You remember recently when the governor, the deputy governor, went to Juba, they briefed the president saying that the state is peaceful, which to me is just a false statement because
Tut Red is the Director General in the Upper Nile State Ministry of Information. He says the man who was killed outside the UN camp was the driver for the Speaker of the Upper Nile State Legislative Assembly.
Driver of the Speaker. I think he drive a vehicle from the town market here with people, taking them to UN. Some people, they attack him and then a loss in life. Because of this issue, make an insecurity in the town. In general, security now is calm, very calm, no problem. People are moving. But for security purpose, security agents, they don't like to open a town market because you know the reaction, maybe something will be happening.
Tension was high by midday Friday as the main market remained closed as security forces patrolled the streets to prevent fighting between the host community and some groups from the neighboring areas of Malakal town. In November 2023, the government deployed over 700 necessary unified forces to Upper Nile State to maintain security across the state. For VOA News, I am Amir Abraham Kwad in Malakal.
From Malakal, we move to Juba, where some parents say the arrival of a new malaria vaccine Friday could save lives. A medical doctor at Al Sabah Children's Hospital says cases of malaria have increased in the capital, Juba. South Sudan's health minister says the vaccine could curb malaria cases across the country. Mayang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Al Sabah Children's Hospital in Juba is struggling to treat many children lying on the floor of the crowded wards. Dr. Omawa Angelo, the hospital's acting medical director, says malaria cases are increasing daily.
Usually every day we receive like 500 children in a day. So out of this 500, we admitted like 50 patients in a day. So most of the patients that we admitted have severe malaria. So malaria is the most common cause for admission here in Sabah Children's Hospital.
South Sudan received 645,000 doses of the R21 Matrix M vaccine, which will be used as part of routine childhood immunizations. The World Health Organization says 3 doses of the vaccine can reduce the risk of contracting malaria by 75%. Solomon Carlos Child is being treated for malaria at the El Sabah Hospital. He says his son is recovering, but he thinks the R21 Matrix M vaccine will protect children in South Sudan.
Yesterday is very difficult, but today now he's turned to good condition. We are excited, very excited to have this vaccine so that to help our family and some of our families.
According to UNICEF, South Sudan is one of the countries in East Africa with high numbers of malaria cases. UNICEF officials say South Sudan registers 18 deaths from malaria daily, and there has been a 78% surge in cases. Humphrey Karamaji is the World Health Organization representative in South Sudan.
This vaccine really adds to our arsenal of interventions that will help us in managing the malaria burden. We are committed to support the government in ensuring that this vaccine is available in all the 80 counties of South Sudan eventually. Together, we are not just deploying a vaccine, but actually paving the way for a better future of the children and the people in South Sudan.
Yolanda Awilding is South Sudan's National Minister of Health. She says the new vaccine will be rolled out in 28 counties. She is calling on parents to take their children for malaria vaccinations.
All the time when we have got a new strategy to tackle a disease in our country as well as other countries, people are skeptical. The same way we are skeptical about COVID-19 vaccination, we shouldn't be skeptical about this.
The WHO approved the R21 vaccine as the second malaria vaccine in 2023, following the approval of the RTS vaccine in 2021. Both are shown to be safe and effective in preventing malaria in children. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
From Juba, we go to Geneva, where major relief agencies warn time is running out for millions of people in Sudan who they say are at imminent risk of famine because the country's warring parties are preventing aid agencies from reaching them. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
19 global humanitarian organizations, including 12 United Nations agencies, today urged Sudan's warring parties to stop blocking food aid from reaching millions of people suffering from acute hunger. Jens Laerke is spokesperson for the Office for Coordination for Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA. He says heads of these agencies fear many of the 18 million acutely hungry people, including 3.6 million children, will die if the blocked relief pipeline isn't opened.
If they continue to be prevented from providing aid in Sudan rapidly, and at scale, a famine will likely take hold in large parts of the country. More people will flee to neighboring countries. Children will succumb to disease and malnutrition. And women and girls will face even greater suffering and dangers.
Laerke notes acutely malnourished children are 10 to 11 times more likely to die than other children. Sudan, which is in its second year of conflict, is home to the largest number of internally displaced people in the world, nearly 10 million people who have been uprooted from their homes. Laerke says a further 2 million people have fled for safety to neighboring countries as refugees.
Attacks against civilians, including sexual violence, are multiplying, and hospitals and schools are also coming under attack. At the same time, aid workers face systematic obstructions and deliberate denials of access by parties to the conflict. Movements across conflict lines to parts of Khartoum, Darfur, Al Jazeera, and Kordofan have been cut off since mid-December.
This, he warns, would unleash catastrophic humanitarian consequences both in the city and across Darfur. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, factional drama within the SPLM-IO grabs attention. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A faction of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, known as SPLM-IO Kidgwan Group, is calling on the mediator of the South Sudan talks in Nairobi to include Gatkwot Biel Nyang, who says he's the new leader of the group. He tells my colleague Nabil Biagio that there is a change in the Kidgwan leadership.
This convention results in the removal of First Lieutenant General Simon de Wijsden from his chairmanship, and then from his chairman of the movement, IO Kidgwan.
When did it happen exactly? Then, do you have the date?
Yes, in May. In May, that is the decision came. But this came after we talked and we asked the generals in the ground. Since January, it was just in consultation. But the decision came when we held that convention.
Just to make sure I got you clearly, you are trying to remove General Simon Gajdual from the leadership of the Kidgwan faction because you have differences on how to achieve peace. You want to come to Juba, work with the government, implement the Khartoum peace agreement, and he is not willing to do that. Did I get you correctly?
Yes.
And now there are peace talks going on in Nairobi. What is your position regarding that?
The President of the Republic of South Sudan, Salva Kiir Mayardit, called for all non-security agreement to come to Nairobi. Now there is peace talk in Nairobi, and that is a good opportunity to all whom are not joined peace before or whom are outside. Like, for example, the group of Garu Ajduel, which is actually we were together. That is a chance because South Sudan, indeed, we could not be away from that peace. So that's why we welcome that initiative.
So you would like for your group to be part of the peace talks in Nairobi?
Exactly, yes.
Now, yes. The reason I wanted to make this clear is because with the peace talks going on in Nairobi right now and everyone wanting to be part of it, as there might be deals struck that will be signed, a peace agreement maybe, and bring on board opposition people and bring them into government. Someone would say the move to remove General Simon Gatkwot Biel right now and the call for your group to go to Nairobi is
It sounds opportunistic, and it is not tied to any genuine issues that might benefit the cause of peace or the people of South Sudan. What would you say to that?
Unfortunately, that is incorrect, because no one can say like that, because this one, it is opportunity to South Sudanese, okay? Because we want to stop war. And now when Simon Garwigwell is still in Khartoum or in Rabat, in White Nile, why are you sitting there or being there in Sudan when Sudan is not stable? And we have already signed an agreement with the government. So it is for him to come to Juba to implement that one. If he refuses, that means he has another agenda.
That's Gatkwoth Biel Nyang, a member of the SPLM-IO Kidgwang group. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio earlier on Thursday. The Secretary General of the SPLM-IO Kidgwang group, loyal to General Simon Gatwich Dual, says his group was invited to attend the Nairobi talks, but they declined due to a short notice from the mediator. Goi Joel says, God quote, Biel Nyang is not fit to represent SPLM-IO Kidgwang group at the ongoing talks in Nairobi.
When Kidgwang was formed, it was not formed online. You know, we have leaders of Kidgwang who left from different places and met in McGuinness, which is Kidgwang. And I was just wondering what online leadership he's talking about. You know, we have officers on the ground in South Sudan. We have generals on the ground. Why would he do an online conference with diaspora if there is a command in place? Also, you know, looking at the letter, I was also surprised, because why go to Nairobi if he's implementing the peace agreement that he's saying that was signed in Khartoum? It should just implement it in Juba.
I saw a letter from the mediator of the peace talks, Lazarus Simboy, inviting General Simon Gatwich to attend the talks with the holdout groups. Why are you not there?
True, we did receive a letter from Bayo. It was late. Knowing the logistical problems our chairman is in, our chairman is in an area where he cannot travel now. We were looking for ways that he gets out, and it took us more than 2 weeks to do that.
Talk to me about the new guy or the new kid on the block who is now calling himself the interim chairman and commander-in-chief of the Kidgwang group.
All these things happen in South Sudan only. You know, people like the names like commander. Even if you cannot command your own language or your own family, you want to be a commander-in-chief of anything. And as you have just seen it in his letter, he said he talked to people online. He may be a commander-in-chief online. Garquot Biel was working with General Gadweg Dwell. You know, he's a family relative to Gadweg Dwell. When Kidgwang was formed,
Gadweg Dwell, the chairperson of the Kidgwang group.
General Gadweg Dwell, he was close to him, but he was not part of any leadership command of SPLM-IO Kidgwang. Mr. Henero Dwar, he's the vice chairman of SPLMA Kidgwang, and I'm the secretary general. We have an executive committee comprising of 7 people, and he's not close to that area. Gatkwoth Biel was deported from Kosti.
It's very rare for South Sudanese to be deported from Sudan.
The guy is a middleman. The guy is a businessman. He trades in the names of people. You know, when the very Khartoum peace agreement is talking about, he was one of the few people that were bribed to bring General Gatkwoth Biel in. And when he failed to do that, he went to do a restaurant business in Khartoum. He has his own business. And during the war in Sudan, he used his money to transport some of RSF members to Western Sudan. And the Sudan security caught him on that. General Gatkwoth Biel tried to plead that, oh, you can leave this boy alone and not send him back. But it was too late. The guy was already in Kosti. If you could have seen his videos on Facebook, he was crying. The guy was deported. And to save his skin, you have to say that, oh, I've been trying to persuade Gatkwoth to join the peace agreement, what he called the Khartoum peace agreement that did not work. The Khartoum peace agreement was the one that Kidgwang signed with those of Olwenge. And Olwenge went and joined Juba. All the members that were sent to Juba by Gatkwoth Biel did not come back. You know, some of them died there.
Let me get this right. Someone who has been your member, involved in what I will call gastro diplomacy, meaning is he was involved in the food industry. Now I see his title as First Lieutenant General.
You know people in South Sudan people like ranks, people like to be called commanders in chief. How can he be a first lieutenant commander without an army? He has never been in South Sudan or on the ground. As I speak to you, we have a chief of staff for Kitgwang. We have commanders in Kitgwang that are lower than his rank, active commanders. That's a self-promotion.
That's Goi Joyol, Secretary General of the SPLM-IO Kitgwang Group, loyal to General Simon Gatwich Dual. He spoke to me earlier today. And now to U.S. politics. U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is guilty of falsifying financial records to hide a payment to an adult film star to influence the outcome of the 2016 election. Tina Trin reports from New York.
Guilty on all 34 counts? That's what a unanimous New York jury decided after less than 2 days of deliberation, that Donald Trump, the first U.S. president tried in a criminal court, falsified business records to suppress potentially damaging information ahead of his 2016 election. After hearing the verdict, the presumed 2024 Republican presidential candidate left the courthouse, saying voters will decide his fate on Election Day.
This was a rigged, disgraceful trial. The real verdict is going to be November 5th by the people.
But those voters may not include Trump himself, says University of Virginia professor Barbara Perry.
It would be the case that if he maintains his residency in Florida, a state where convicted felons are not allowed to vote, that he literally would not be allowed to vote for himself.
President Joe Biden's reelection campaign released a statement saying, "In New York today, we saw that no one is above the law." Former federal prosecutor and New York Law School professor Steve Cohen was not surprised by the verdict.
The legal reality is either you believe in the jury system or you don't. And I happen to believe in the jury system. The case was tried. It was tried carefully, at times almost meticulously. It doesn't mean there won't be issues on appeal. There always are issues on appeal. It doesn't mean that there won't be surprises to come.
22 witnesses testified in the six-week trial, including a tabloid newspaper editor who described suppressing stories critical of Trump. Adult film star Stormy Daniels, who said she was paid to keep quiet about a sexual encounter with Trump that he denies. And former Trump attorney Michael Cohen, who said he made those payments to Daniels on Trump's behalf. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg said the jury made its decision based on the evidence in the law.
And while this defendant may be unlike any other in American history, we arrived at this trial and ultimately today at this verdict in the same manner as every other case that comes through the courtroom doors, by following the facts and the law and doing so without fear or favor.
Trump's sentencing is scheduled for July 11th, just days before the Republican Party is expected to formally nominate him as its presidential candidate at a party convention in the Midwestern state of Wisconsin. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
And it's time now for us to hear what you think about this program, how we should do, and what we should change. We start with a voice message from a listener.
This is Peter Gosh Anyang Mojongdul in Jonglei State town of Bor. As results are trickling in South Africa, I urge all the South Africans to accept the outcome of the election regardless of the political parties, because in every race there is a winner and a loser.
A listener who calls himself Balash Joram in Zara County of Western Equatorial State writes, "Hello, Tanza. I'm not happy to see how the economic crisis in South Sudan is affecting the vulnerable and disabled citizens. I witnessed a short story in the week where a grandmother with her two grandchildren returned from the market with 4,500 South Sudanese pounds, saying it cannot buy food, and eventually they ended up buying a local bread. But I hope the talks in Nairobi would solve the economic problem in the country." Samuel Rameau in Yei writes, "Hi, John and Nabil. My appreciation goes to His Excellency President William Ruto for training potential policemen who shall be going to maintain the gang in Haiti." Another listener called Daniel Ariak Michael in Yei Town rights. The extrajudicial killings, torture, and harassment in eastern Equatorial State by gangs is unlawful. The government should bring this to an end. Isaac Sabre Khamis in Western Equatoria is urging the government to really commit themselves to peace talks taking place in Kenya. He says he believes that taking genuine direction can only achieve peace. Hello, John and Nabil. Amos Khamis is writing from Yei. The hyperinflation is affecting our economy. The government should consider its own currency value. Thomas Kuhn Torch in Old Fangak Payam writes, hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. The delays in paying civil servants' salaries for more than 7 months is not fair. Many people will desert their workplace and look for other means of survival somewhere. James Roy Majok from Unity State Town of Bantu writes, hi, VOA South Sudan in Focus. I give my special thanks to Central Equatorial State Governor for appointing former VOA journalist Wake Simon Wudu as a press secretary in his office. This is one of the good appointments made by the governor of Central Equatorial State. Another listener writes, dear John Tanza and Nabil Biagio, I am Thon Mahmoud Makwet in Juba. The only hope for people of South Sudan is for God to help them out of the suffering and exploitation they are in. Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the management of the Voice of America or this program. Keep your comments coming, and we shall sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. I repeat, our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday, May 31st, 2024. We now leave you with the song Malenge by Extra Musica.
Je t'en prie, reviens ma bien-aimée.
Been listening to Extra Musica and the song Malenge. The group Extra Musica is actually from Congo Brazzaville. Not all good music comes from Congo Kinshasa. I'm your host John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Peter Heinle, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Hey,
Maria, bisanga soki bolingo nyoso ezala ta boye, bo miséréable.